Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 170, recorded July 6th, 2013. And today, Russ and I are very excited that we get to do another interview with Diana Wahlstedt. You guys remember we did one a while ago, and it was fabulous talking to her, so she has graciously agreed to join us again today. And in case you didn't hear the last one, I will tell you a little bit about her before we get started. Diana trained as a microbiologist and spent many years doing medical research at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Her last position before she retired was as a cell biologist at the National Institute of Environmental Health Science. She's also a longtime aquarium hobbyist and published Ecology of the Planted Aquarium in 1999. This book has been translated into German, Italian, and Polish. Ooh, Russ, we should get it in Italian sometime. That would be cool. Recently, she published an e-book version of the Planted Aquarium book.
So, without further ado, we would like to welcome Diana Wahlstedt to the Aquarimax audio show.
And we're very happy to have her back with us again.
Well, I'm very glad to be back.
Your last interview was very popular with our listeners.
Yes.
Not surprisingly, of course, but okay. We're excited to have you back, and they are too. So, Kelly, why don't you start out with our first question?
Okay. Well, we're going to be talking with Diana about mycobacteriosis today. So give us an explanation of exactly what is mycobacteriosis.
Okay. That is a mouthful, mycobacteriosis, but basically it's fish TB, and most people see it or recognize it as kind of a wasting disease where the bellies of their fish shrink up. However, that's only one symptom. There are many symptoms that go unrecognized by hobbyists. It is a chronic disease. It is probably the most prevalent disease in the hobby. However, hobbyists don't recognize it, and they're not aware of it.
So they probably misdiagnose it as something else?
Well, it's very hard to diagnose. It certainly caught me by surprise. I had fish, very, very healthy fish, that suddenly or gradually began to develop mouth sores. And I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I knew and realized it was mycobacteriosis was that I took the fish to a fish veterinarian, and he diagnosed it as that disease.
Mm.
Yes. So hobbyists are not aware of it, but it is responsible probably for about a 50% of fish deaths. If your fish dies for no reason, it could very well be due to mycobacteriosis.
That's a pretty high number.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Now, as I understand it, mycobacteriosis is caused by bacteria, several species, quite a number of species of one genus, Mycobacterium genus. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. They are they're called environmental mycobacteria because they live in the environment. They can be found in water, soils, hospital swimming pools, drinking water, fish tanks. They're everywhere. And so
wow.
They are called environmental mycobacteria.
And there is, I guess that kind of leads to our next question. You hear a lot of terms. You hear the term mycobacteriosis. You hear fish TB. You hear piscine tuberculosis. And then, of course, when anyone hears the term tuberculosis, they think about the connection with human tuberculosis. So can you clarify all of that for us a little bit?
Yes, I would be glad to. Mycobacteriosis is the scientific term for the disease. It is a disease of fish and reptiles. So frogs, toads, and snakes, they can get it as well. Disease of fish and reptiles. Fish TB is it's mycobacteriosis in fish. And piscine tuberculosis is just another fancy term for fish TB. And this is always mycobacteriosis in fish. Now, human tuberculosis is totally different. It's a human disease. It is caused by one species of bacterium. The name of that bacteria that causes human TB is Mycobacterium tuberculosis. So that's easy to remember.
Yeah.
Hard
that's
to forget.
Nice.
Yeah, that's convenient. Mm. The environmental mycobacteria that cause the fish TB, I'm going to use the term fish TB because we don't need to get that technical.
It's easier to say, right?
Yeah, it's easier to say. It's just three syllables, not 20. So fish TB is caused by environmental mycobacteria, and they are in the same genus as the human TB, but they live in the environment. Many of the species, there are about 140 species, most of them are harmless. They just eat organic matter. But under certain circumstances, they become pathogenic to fish. And in aquariums, that's one environment where they often become pathogenic.
Wow. So are there some species in the genus that never become pathogenic, or do all of them have the potential to do it?
There are a few. Mycobacterium smegmatis, I think, is one that the scientists have been using as a control for the virulent species. There are a few, yes, that are totally non, or well, a pathogenicity is a relative term. If you're totally immunocompromised, almost any bacteria will take advantage of the situation. But so it's a relative term. The ones that are the most pathogenic to fish are Mycobacterium marinum, and there's another, Haemophyllum. I can't pronounce these names, but there are about six that are, the scientists generally find these six routinely in fish that have died from the disease.
So those are the most virulent species in the genus then?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a sliding scale.
Okay.
What seems to make the mycobacteriosis, these different bacteria, become pathogenic?
They become, they don't really become pathogenic. They just become a problem when there's large numbers of them in certain environments encourage large numbers. Ironically, it's clean tanks where people have disinfected tanks. And what happens is they kill all the environmental bacteria, mycobacteria, are extremely resistant to antibiotics, disinfectants, Clorox, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So when people, aquarium hobbyists, treat their tanks with antibiotics or they disinfect the tanks, what they're doing is killing off other bacteria, and the mycobacteria, they thrive under those conditions because they don't have any competition now.
Oh.
So basically what happens when humans often take antibiotics, they lose their beneficial gut flora, and
yes,
then they can become immunocompromised. And the same sort of thing is happening in an aquarium?
Yes. Very good. Yeah, I like that analogy. Yeah.
Do they have probiotics for fish?
Yes, they do. Some of the aquaculture farms do use probiotics. I think it's been found to be beneficial.
Well, that's pretty cool.
There are even some hobbyist foods that now include probiotics.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think Cobalt Blue makes one, and I think Hikari makes one.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out there now for hobbyist use.
Yeah, it's a good idea. You fill, okay, the intestines with bacteria that are beneficial so that the pathogens don't have attachment sites, and yeah, it's good.
You kind of out-compete them so they don't become a problem.
Yes, that's true. And some of the human diseases, C. diffic- Clostridium difficile, That happens. People get that disease. It can be very serious after they've taken antibiotics. If they take antibiotics, they will get some of these diseases because these pathogens can now, they don't have any competition, so they've got a free ride, and they can multiply to numbers that now become a problem.
I see.
So the pathogenicity of mycobacteriosis is mainly a numbers game. It's not the virulence per se of the species. It is the numbers of the bacteria, how many there are in the tank. Is the fish immune, or is it does it have full immunity, or is its immunity weakened by trauma or something like that? So a lot of fish that have once they've been shipped to, you know, they're shipped from the wholesalers and to the aquarium store, and then they get in the hobbyist tank. I mean, they've gone through several weeks of stress, and their immune systems are lowered, and they're now very vulnerable to mycobacteriosis. So,
okay, that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, it does.
Poor fishies.
Yeah, poor fishies is right. Yeah, it's tough being a new fish in a new tank.
It is. Yeah.
Now, you've mentioned a couple of the characteristics of mycobacteria that make them so challenging to deal with, one being that they're really resistant to disinfectants and to antibiotics. What are some of their other characteristics that make them difficult to deal with?
Well, they're impossible to treat. So for fish, I mean, there's no antibiotic that will kill them. So, or kill them when they're in a fish. So it's an untreatable disease. And the other thing is that it's unrecognized. I mean, a fish can look perfectly normal and be carrying it, and then when that fish is brought into a new tank, the other fish are, you know, maybe totally susceptible. So the problem is that you can't see the disease.
You don't even know necessarily that it's in the tank.
Yeah. See, that's what happened to me. I bought these beautiful new rainbow fish, and they looked great. And 6 months later, my other fish started having problems. So,
because the rainbow fish were carrying it?
I think so. It's hard to say, but I do know that the other rainbow fish had the mycobacteria. They were diagnosed with it, so they had it. I'm pretty sure they got it from the new fish, but I'm not absolutely sure. It's very hard to track. That's the problem. It's a very slow disease. It might take months or years to manifest itself. So people, you know, they don't recognize it. They bring a new fish home, it looks okay, but then it dies 3 months later, and they say, hey, what happened?
Right.
And they just, yeah, and that happens over and over again, and hobbyists, they're just not really aware of it.
And you can't really treat it prophylactically because you can't treat it at all.
No, that's true.
In terms of, yeah, you can't use an antibiotic that would be a prophylaxis. So
no.
Another complication there.
Yeah.
So really the only way to deal with it is preventative.
Yes. Yes. Very careful quarantining and some other techniques that I guess we'll talk about later.
Okay.
You want to get into those now, Russ? Did you have another question first?
Let's talk about the steps that we can take to prevent our fish from becoming victims.
These preventative steps?
Yeah, preventative steps.
Let's do it now.
Go ahead and talk about that now.
Okay. Yeah, that's always the best. Well, I mentioned quarantining. That's very important. I also might want to say that some of the ideas that I've gotten have come from the breeding of zebrafish for scientific studies. There are hundreds of labs in the country that do scientific studies using zebrafish. And lo and behold, the main problem, these breeding fish breeding facilities have is mycobacteriosis. And so that's their main disease that they have problems with. And so they have described steps that will help prevent the problem or deal or manage the problem. And they agree with me. I agree with them. I hate to say it. First, a UV sterilizer is a big help because it that's what I brought my fish TB outbreak under control is a UV sterilizer. It kills the bacteria in the water, and that includes the mycobacteria that causes.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah. It's a great tool.
Yeah, at least something will kill them, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, UV light is very powerful for killing these bacteria.
And on your advice on our last interview, I went ahead and purchased one, and I've installed it, and I love it.
Great. Okay.
So, yeah. Go ahead.
No, please.
I was just going to say, I hadn't had a lot of recent problems with it when by that time, but I was worried about it occurring again, and I've had it, and since installing that, it's been really great. My fish appear to be doing very well.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I think it's especially important in a quarantine tank when you have new fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, the fish are very vulnerable. New fish are very vulnerable, and to whatever's in the tank. And if you can kind of clean up the water with a UV sterilizer, that gives them a little bit of time to develop immunity and kind of get settled in.
Right.
The other thing is the environmental mycobacteria that cause fish TB. They are very fatty-like. And so they float to the surface of the water. And so I always, when I'm cleaning the tank, the number one thing I do is remove any surface biofilms, that kind of sticky goo at the top.
Right.
Yeah, and the other reason it's important to remove it is that if your fish feed at the surface, like mine do, like my rainbow fish, or if you have, betas and other fish that feed at the surface, ingesting the food is the way fish get infected. That's the route of infection. It's not through the gills or through the skin. It's when they eat, they ingest the mycobacteria. And if you've got a big scum on the surface of your tank filled with mycobacteria and the fish are eating at the surface, that's a disaster.
Yeah, not a good equation.
Yeah. So that the environmental mycobacteria, they do they have a fatty kind of coating or cell wall. They have a fatty cell wall and it makes them like fat, and they float to the surface. And that fatty wall is why they are so resistant to antibiotics and Clorox. The Clorox and antibiotics just can't get in through that fat layer.
They have a lipid-based armor.
Yes, thank you. Yes. That's the whole key to the mycobacteria is that lipid layer. In fact, that's where their name comes from. It's mycolipids. Their cell wall is made out of mycolipids mycolic acids. And these are strange lipids that these bacteria that characterize this bacteria.
So what's the best technique for getting that scum off the surface of the water?
Well, that's a good question. I tried putting pieces of paper on the surface and letting it suck up the scum, but the easiest thing I do, I have a pitcher, and I just, when I'm doing a water change, I just, I don't know how you skim it, just skim it off the surface with that cup or whatever that I'm using. And I just, when I change the water, I just remove it from the top. I get that scum as I change the water.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the way I do it.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And I've also noticed that if you have a filter that causes some surface turbulence, that tends to break up the scum and kind of help it help it to avoid being formed.
Yes, yes, that's
degree.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's definitely another help. And the other
thing, there are even some filters out there. I know Doctors Foster and Smith has a filter with a built-in surface skimmer, so it pulls water off the surface down into the intake under the surface, and then pulls it up through the filter. I've never tried one, but I think that might be of some help too.
Yes, the only problem with that is that it's just going to shoot the bacteria into the water. So
that makes sense. It could be an issue.
Yeah,
yeah.
If they tend to float, if you can get them to float up to the top and then take them off, is that better than stirring
them?
It's better
it's better because the fish aren't eating them at the surface when they're eating their flake food or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, it would help. The best thing would be to have a skimmer hooked up to and then have it go through a UV filter.
That'd be good.
That would be the ultimate. The other thing, I'm glad you mentioned this about the skimmers, because if you have salt water and use a protein skimmer, that's a great way to remove the mycobacteria, because the surface biofilm and all those nasty mycobacteria are skimmed off the surface and then they're discarded.
Right. You just take the collection cup and get rid of all sorts of mycobacterium every time.
That's right. Yeah, that works in saltwater tanks.
It's too bad that fresh water is not viscous enough for skimmers like that to work. Protein
yeah,
skimmer.
It's too bad.
Maybe somebody needs to invent a freshwater skimmer, huh?
Yeah,
protein skimmer.
They would do that. They
You do it. You invent it. You got all kinds of ideas.
that will reduce the numbers, having a UV sterilizer and then keeping the scums off of the surface.
Okay,
and
so
then
those are probably like main lines of defense.
Yes, I would say that. And the other, of course, monitoring the fish, good quarantine. When I say monitoring the fish, I mean if you see a fish that's has a shrunken belly or is not behaving well, get it into another tank. Culling, controlling.
Okay.
Getting the pathogens. Because
get away from the other fish as soon as you can.
Yeah, because the fish is the main. Once the fish is infected, it becomes a huge reservoir of these bacteria. And as I said, the more of these bacteria you have, the worse it is. The
and
other
when you find a fish is symptomatic. Would you just recommend humanely euthanizing it? Is that the best to do?
Yeah. I usually do.
That's what I've
done. Because you can't heal them, right? I mean, there's nothing that's going to fix it.
Right. I mean,
that's what I ended up doing, because my rainbow fish were exhibiting symptoms a couple of years ago. And when everyone became symptomatic, that's what I did. I just didn't want to endanger all the other fish.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, that's what I do. It's part of being a good fish keeper, I think, is culling. You just have to do it.
To keep the system healthy.
Yeah. I think a lot of, it's part of being a good fish keeper. The other thing, on the quarantine, it doesn't do any good just to buy a new fish and then put it in a tank, a quarantine tank for 3 months, because that fish could be infected. And when you put it in your tank, even after 3 months, it can still infect the others. So I recommend and what the scientists strongly recommend is using a sentinel fish. And what they do is in their fish breeding facilities, the water that comes, they have the quarantine tank with the new fish, and then the water from that tank flows into a tank with a sentinel fish. And that's a canary in the coal mine fish. And that fish will become sick if the new fish is sick.
If he's carrying it, it'll make the other fish sick, and then you know not to put it in your main tank.
Right.
Okay.
So,
Makes sense that you are, in effect, sacrificing that one fish to preserve the health of all the other fish in your system.
Exactly. Yeah. Because when, if you just buy a new fish and put it in a quarantine tank, a lot of times, you know, these fish with that are infected with mycobacteria, they won't show it. They have enough immunity themselves that they can carry it for years without showing any symptoms. But if you put a fish with them that has doesn't have the disease and has no immunity to it won't have any immunity to the mycobacteria because it doesn't have the disease. So it's a sitting duck. And it will show the infection very quick, you know, much, you know, within probably a few weeks.
So that does make sense, especially if you have a big system and you know that you're running a risk by placing this new potentially infected fish in. That's a lot better to lose that one sentinel fish.
Yeah, and there's chances are you might not lose the fish. If the new fish isn't sick, your sentinel will be fine.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So it's a potential risk, but it's not necessarily one.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a problem.
Right. You're right. You understand. So, the main problem with fish TB is that you can't see it. And, you know, and not everybody is willing to sacrifice, you know, take their fish to a veterinarian. And the easiest way is to quarantine it with a sentinel fish and just monitor what happens.
Okay.
Right.
And we talked about the difference between, you know, fish TB and human TB. Can fish TB be transmitted to humans?
Yes, it can. Thank you for asking. This is, unfortunately, a lot of hobbyists don't know that they can get sores, which are, you know, very kind of bad sores on their hands and arms from cleaning out their tanks. And what happens is if the hobbyist has a small skin break, the environmental mycobacteria can get in and start a skin infection. And this condition is called fish tank granuloma. And the sores don't heal. It takes a long, long time for them to heal. And they're kind of pustules. And the problem is that many medical doctors, they don't recognize it for what it is, fish tank granuloma. And I'll just give you one story. It's a true story. One of the officers in the local aquarium club, she got this sore on her finger that just wouldn't go away, and it became kind of debilitating on the finger. She went to her doctor, and he recommended surgery. And so she was scheduled to have this, you know, a kind of hideous sore removed. And in the meantime, she talked to one of her fellow, a hobbyist, and he said, you know, wait a minute, this could be fish tank granuloma. Why don't you, you know, let your doctor talk to a fish veterinarian? And so that's what happened. The fish vet and the medical doctor got together, and the medical doctor realized that what he was dealing with, fish tank granuloma. And
what did they do to treat it after that?
Okay, well, they canceled the surgery and treated it. And then she went on a course of antibiotics, which it's a little bit difficult, but it does work. And she was able, it healed by itself with the antibiotic treatment.
Kind of scary.
It is. And, a lot of people, most aquarium hobbyists, even ones in the aquarium society, they were not aware of this disease.
Right.
And then they go to their doctors, and the doctor doesn't know what they're talking about. And I just think that anybody who has a fish tank ought to be, at least know about it.
Definitely.
Yeah, and The other thing I would say is that the tank can look normal. This woman who had it, her tanks were all looked fine. You know, they were mm-hmm. normal.
But
and
still in the water.
Exactly.
Waiting.
Yeah, waiting for it. And it was just, yeah, she just had a sliver. It was just a little pinprick was how the, it was just enough to break the skin and let those bacteria in.
Wow.
So
another good reason to wear aquarium gloves when you're working in your tanks.
Yeah, I tried that, but it was pretty. I didn't. Are they? Do you use them or?
I do actually. Yeah.
Oh.
I stick my hands in my tanks so much that I got some that are. They go up almost to my shoulders.
Okay.
And they're big rubber gloves, so I imagine that would be a pretty good protection.
Yes. If they're those purple ones, they're very thick.
His are red and blue. I don't know what the purple ones are, but
okay.
Maybe they're a different brand.
Well,
I mean,
I'm sure they're, yeah. I got some, and I found it really hard to use them. What I do is if I've been working in the tank, I soap up within 30 minutes of working in the tank. I just wash my hands and arms really carefully.
Okay.
Yeah.
So normal hygiene, you know, you're touching your tank, wash your hands.
Exactly, yeah.
I also usually do that, and I will often follow up with some hand sanitizer. I've heard that they're more vulnerable, the mycobacterium are more vulnerable to alcohol in high concentrations, I think over 60%, than they are to a lot of other disinfectants.
Yes, that's true, because of the lipid. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. The best disinfectant is some kind of alcohol, 70% isopropanol or any kind of alcohol because of the lipid solute. Yeah, you're right. That's much better than Clorox.
I also have got some 70% isopropyl alcohol for that purpose. If I need to sterilize, pruning scissors or something, I use that.
Yes. Yeah, that's very good. That's it.
Good
you
idea.
Seem to have read up on this quite a bit.
Well, thanks to you. I started with your article, your original article, and I continue to do some research from there.
Okay, good.
And that kind of brings us to our next point. We know that you have a new workout on mycobacteriosis, and we'd like to ask you to direct our listeners to it. How can they access that?
Well, my article, I wrote it in 2009, and I updated it this year as much as I updated it. So it's on my my book's website. And
okay.
And we're going to put that link
up,
right?
Yeah, we'll put that link up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want, it's a long link, so.
right.
But
it's the same one that you gave us last time, right?
Yeah, it's the same one, except I did revise it this year.
Okay. But, I mean, the link is the same. So
yeah.
We can put the same link on our website, and then people can go directly to it and see your new updated article.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they will be happy to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
No.
Uh-oh. Did we lose you?
No. I was just... the only thing I was going to say is that... the zebrafish facilities, they are continuing to work on this problem, and their findings are very germane to the aquarium hobby, and you know it's solid information. And I do have in my new update revision, I have a few new references from those zebrafish facilities.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, that would be
some
great follow-up information.
Yeah, it's Michael Kent and Harif. Let's see. No, it's Whips. Whips, he wrote an article in 2012, and then Michael Kent wrote one in 2009, and those go into kind of the things that people can do to protect their tanks.
Okay.
That would be really helpful.
Yeah. In fact, I think I've read one of those.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
That's good.
Makes sense.
You did your homework.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. Yeah. I've also written an article on human tuberculosis. it's kind of a family story. My grandmother died of it when she was just 27 years old. She left my mother motherless, essentially.
Wow.
And so it had a big impact on my family.
Yeah.
So
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I wrote a long article on human tuberculosis and got a little bit into the science, but the other part of it is kind of a biography explaining how the disease affected my ancestors.
Well, that would be really interesting, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, is that available too?
Yes, uh-huh. That's on my WordPress website at dwalstead.com. You know, I can give it to you later as a link.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can put that
great
one up too.
If you could send that to us, then we'd
okay.
We could post it as well.
Yeah, I'm going to be working on revising that from time to time, as well as the one on mycobacteriosis.
Okay, good. It's always nice to have those as current as possible, as new
mm-hmm.
new information
yeah.
comes to light.
And also, I invite your listeners, if they have any comments or suggestions, have them write to me. I'd love to hear, you know, if they have any suggestions or new information or what.
And you have contact information on your website that they can access?
Yes. Yeah.
Great. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you heard it, folks.
I've opened the floodgate.
Something else too. Diana's very well known in the hobby for her book Ecology of the Planet Aquarium, and a new digital edition has come out, which I announced in our last podcast, but I might as well announce it again since we're talking to her right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is available on your website as well. Is that right?
Yes, and also Amazon.com, iTunes. I think Amazon is selling it for about $10.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they're...
Very good deal. So, if you've been interested in getting the book, but you couldn't find it for $10, now you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amazon is undercutting the price to sell their Kindles, I think.
Okay.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, is that all of our questions that we were going
to go through?
I think
that covers all of our questions. Anything else that you wanted to mention, Diana?
No, I think I'm about out of breath here. Yeah. No, I just encourage people to go to my article. It's 10 pages long and has a lot of scientific information and references. And it also describes what happened to me. I mean, my fish, and what
right.
a trauma it was to go through that disease. I thought I would have to tear down all my tanks, but I ended up not having to do that. Just I learned how to manage the disease.
Right, and that's really the best we can do at this point, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And even the zebrafish people, the scientists kind of came to that conclusion. If they had a very virulent EM, they would have to, you know, nuke everything and tear down the facility. But if it was kind of a low-level pathogen, they just learned how to deal with it. Because when they tried to, you know, set up sterilized colonies of zebrafish and, you know, have them free of the mycobacteria totally, it just never worked. Within a few months, the mycobacteria were back in the water. So it's, you know, you just can't get rid of it. It's there.
I think that's a great point because I've heard and seen on forums and so on, people will say, well, you can never really get rid of mycobacteria, which is, of course, true. But that means that if you've ever had an infection, you should never use that tank again or something like that. But I don't think that's true. It just means that you have to, as you mentioned, you have to manage the disease.
Right.
Make sure you're taking all the steps to prevent it from becoming the dominant bacteria. If you take all the steps we talked about, like managing the surface scum and using UV sterilization, you can keep it from becoming an issue, but you can never really completely eliminate them from the system.
That is true.
And you can have tanks that have been completely healthy for years and remain completely healthy, and they probably have some degree of EM in there.
Yeah, it's everywhere. There's no way to get rid of it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm glad that you're confirming what I was suspecting.
Yes, I agree with you totally.
Some people have gone to the extent of saying, I'm going to get rid of all my tanks and I'll start over, you know, at some point. But I can't use these tanks anymore because they've had it in there anymore. But as soon as they set up another tank, they're going to have it in there again. So it's pointless to go from that direction.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Even the zebrafish people, I mean, they started with sterilized eggs and sterilized the tanks. And within a few months, the fish had, you know, I mean, they weren't diseased, but there were mycobacteria in the tank. And as I said, many of the environmental mycobacteria are totally non-virulent.
Right.
Well, I think we've gotten a good grip on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being willing to come on our show again.
Okay. Well, I'm very happy to have been here. I think this disease is important. It's, you know, it makes knowing how to combat it can make the hobby a lot more fun.
Right. And I think it's great that you have been willing to share your experience in an informative way that can help a lot of hobbyists avoid issues and understand it and kind of break down some of the myths that surround mycobacteriosis. So we're really grateful for that, and I'm sure our listeners are too.
And as always, you are a delight to talk to.
All right. Thank you, Kelly. Okay.
Well, thanks again, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in the future.
Okay. Very good, Russ. Russ and Kelly, thank you so much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.